Blog Talk Radio.
Ron Edwards coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul on the Ron and Don program here on Worldwide Radio, really, if you will. Beautiful day, beautiful weather here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. A lot of things going on. We're in the midst of a rather somewhat dull political election for mayor and city council, if you will. But there are a lot of things that are still going on, if you will. I'll take a look at a couple of them tonight. Again, my colleague and co-host, Mr. Allen, is still on academic assignment, if you will. Hopefully we'll be back at some point in time. We chit-chatted about it earlier this afternoon. But the program must go on. The news must continue to be disseminated, if you will, around the world, across the nation, and locally. And I tell you, as we said before, there is a lot going on. Let me just, as we did last week, breaking the news that Minneapolis Police Lieutenant John DeMonaco, president of the Minneapolis Police Department's Police Federation, or union as it is known to some, from 1999 to 2015, was in the process of filing a lawsuit, defamation lawsuit, against incumbent mayor Democrat Betsy Hodges. That story broke on the Saturday edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Of course, they forgot to indicate that the story had already been disseminated, made available, and drawn to the attention of the world by this program, which is a black program, if you will. But hey, we understand. But anyways, in the story in the Minneapolis Star Tribune last Saturday, the attorneys for Lieutenant DeMonaco clearly indicated that defamation and other kinds of legal improprieties were the order of the day. And so we keep our eye on that, continue to break these stories. In our column in the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder next week, we talk specifically about the actual history, the real history of John DeMonaco, a man who was identified as a racist, if you will, untrustworthy, and et cetera, and et cetera, and et cetera. All of that untrue. As we said on last week's program, we have known Lieutenant DeMonaco all of his life, really. We knew his relatives, if you will. We played high school football, and this is way back in the late 1950s, with some of his relatives, friends, or friends of his relatives, and et cetera. We find John to be a upstanding and principled person. Maybe that's what got him into trouble, that he was a man of principle, that he respected people, and et cetera. After our program last Wednesday night, the usual suspects, the talking terms that this journalist did not know what he was talking about. We could not have had or been privy to that kind of information. You know, even our own people sometimes just do not have an appreciation of the fact that there are black folks who are competent and can do the same thing that white folks can do. Maybe in some cases even better, even though we don't have the platforms and et cetera. But tonight we're going to give you another revelation, if you will, and we're going to give you a little background tonight, and this will be primarily for our international and domestic audience, though there are probably many here in the Twin Cities that probably need this information also. Tomorrow morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune will be carrying a small article on the announcement by Chief Medela Elizondo, the current chief of the department, and a man who we consider to be a friend, if you will, a man who we watched come up through the ranks. In fact, we watched him probably to some degree grow up in South Minneapolis. We know many of his relatives and et cetera. Chief Arredondo announced, and this is a shocker to some, I know it's not a shocker to this commentator, that he is inclined to reopen. This is important, my friend, and to this listening audience. Reopen the federal mediation agreement of 2008 and the amendment in 2013 and 14 and 15, if you will, the corrections and amendments proposed by then-Chief Janae Harto, if you will. As it has been discovered by current Chief Arredondo that there has been misconduct on the part of some city officials, particularly in the Human Resources Department, that has really caused a violation of the agreement between the City of Minneapolis, its police department, and the Department of Justice. Now, at the time that these agreements were being made, going back as far as the beginning of the Obama administration, we had Eric Holder as the Attorney General of the United States of America. Later, Loretta Lynch took over for about a year and a half. But it was during that period that false documentation was made available, if you will, unbeknownst to some, to the federal government. Members of the OJP, Office of Justice Programs, provided signatures authenticating the fact that all items had been correctly done and that there had been corrections and finalization, and that's probably a key word, finalization of the PCRC agreements of 2003 to 2008, if you will, actually January 1 of 2004. We are well versed on it for our listening audience, for we were of the Police Community Relations Council, and starting in 2013, we became a member of the OJP, Office of Justice Programs, Steering Committee, under the leadership of since-retired Assistant Chief Chris Arneson, if you will. And so we are very, very aware of the history. But apparently a decision, and the right one, we feel, has been made by Chief Arredondo to possibly reopen the process to allow for corrective action to be taken, which would in fact head off, and we repeat this in the strongest possible terms, head off the possibility by the Sessions, the Jeff Sessions Department of Justice. You see, Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch are not there anymore, people that are concerned or would be concerned about the future of the African-American and others of color in law enforcement. Jeff Sessions and his newly designed Department of Justice really don't have really any interest, but the opportunity, and this is part of the discussion amongst Republicans and in Washington, the opportunity to stick it to the two Democratic senators from Minnesota, if you will, is more than one could ask for. And it is quite clear that Chief Arredondo is making a decision to try to protect, if you will, the administration of Mayor Betsy Hodges, the incumbent mayor serving her first term, who is up for reelection. It was with great surprise and chagrin, if you will, 2.5 weeks ago when the police department and some in the mayor's office, because there were others in the mayor's office who were very complicit in helping to violate federal law, falsified documentation both publicly and privately, because in some of the monies that were being sought from private foundations such as the Bloomberg Foundation, which has poured $5 million in increments of $1 million a year for the next 5 years into the city of Minneapolis. That money, as we have previously reported on our television programs and, of course, this worldwide law radio program, monies that have been used in some cases possibly for criminal enterprise. I hate to say it, but it's a fact. We reported on our television program this past Sunday that there were intercepts of conversations, transactions, and et cetera, while a delegation from the Twin Cities, from Minneapolis specifically, from the city government, were in New York City for a conference, if you will, there for over a week, the week of the 4th of July, et cetera. The New York City Crime Task Force intercepted conversations leading to transactions and et cetera of drug trafficking and et cetera. Also, since that time, there is an entity called GVI. They now call themselves the Group Violence Initiative. It initially was the Gang Violence Initiative. Have been involved in significant improprieties, if you will. The facilitation, key word for federal prosecutors, the facilitation of criminal activity, collusion, and conspiracy, if you will. But it was the actions of the Human Resources Department which drew the real attention to the city of Minneapolis and the GVI program and other programs dealing with crime fighting, public safety, and et cetera. The Human Resources Department falsified documentation, numbers, statistics, data that talked in terms of the recruitment, training, hiring of persons of color. It was discovered about 2.5 weeks ago. As we first reported about a month and a half ago, a man by the name of Hassan Salam, a Nigerian citizen who had been working for the city of Minneapolis for 30 years in a position of responsibility in human resources, had been forced to retire, if you will, and threatened with, even though he is a naturalized American citizen, threatened with the possibility of deportation back to his homeland of Nigeria. The Star Tribune, the major newspaper here in the city of Minneapolis and the largest newspaper in the state of Minnesota, followed by the St. Paul Pioneer Press, declined to really deal with the issue. We're now being, you know, basically told that there were indications, and this has been conveyed to Mr. Salam by the office of the city coordinator who supervises human resources and et cetera, which is headed by an African-American woman. It is disappointing that we have African-Americans and Asians working in our city government who were parties to actions which dismissed, violated, disapproved of a significant number of persons of color, and then proceeded, the Human Resources Department then proceeded to falsify the numbers, if you will, under the direct supervision of an Asian supervisor, if you will, who should not be working in the position that she is in, being involved with the hiring of officers, both white and of color. The particular person in question is getting ready to stand trial for vehicular homicide in an accident which took the life of an individual and actually, and ironically, injured another city employee who was in their automobile driving through the construction zone when this tragic accident happened many months ago. Then nothing but an attempt at cover-up, if you will. The employee in question, clearly ill-motivated, has developed a relationship with an Asian law firm. There have been pass-throughs, if you will. Now we are hearing a story that a decision was made in January of 2016 that there would be no more external investigations and et cetera. That is totally untrue. We have spoken to this on both our television program here in the Twin Cities, and we have spoken about it on our national blog radio program, which is the program that you are listening to. Chief Arredondo is a good man, a man of principle, if you will. Obviously, after he became aware that numbers had been tampered with, misinformation had been provided to the Department of Justice, if you will, information critical to funding for federal anti-crime programs, training, and such activities as that. It was certainly an embarrassment, if you will, but for whatever reason, tomorrow morning's edition, the Star Tribune will indicate that a decision, we repeat again, that a decision has been made to possibly reopen the mediation agreement of 2003 to 2008, and then a corrective action that needed to be taken in 2013, requested by then Mayor, Chief Janae Hartog, that the former Mayor R.T. Ryback had clearly been a party to immediate violations of the agreement of 2008. Documentation clearly shows that, unfortunately, the Department of Justice became convinced with regards to all of the partisan politics in Washington, D.C., this would be an excellent issue to embarrass the Democratic administrations and Democratic office holders in the state of Minnesota. We, as we repeat again, Minnesota's two federal senators are both Democrats, if you will, Senator Franken, Senator Klobuchar, if you will. In fact, Senator Franken was front and center in a blistering exchange with Attorney General Jeff Sessions in a hearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee this morning and then afternoon. It's quite clear there's a lot of bad blood. So hopefully this will help you understand, as our listening audience, about what is at play at this point, because the Sessions Department of Justice is looking very seriously at indicating that there was a serious violation, that there were false declarations made in early 2016 by members of the OJP Federal Oversight Committee, which included, by the way, the president of the Police Federation, but also this commentator who sat as a member of the committee, if you will, the steering committee of the OJP group. We were lied to, if you will. Misrepresentations were made. False documents were provided. When we asked for clarification and a certification of these documents, the office of the mayor apparently stepped in, blocked the need for that, put pressure on then Chief Janae Hartog not to comply, if you will. And for a couple of years, we had asked for information. In April of 2016, the OJP agreement ended, if you will, per the agreement between the City of Minneapolis and the Department of Justice. We were hearing rumors. We continued to ask for information. We had two meetings with the principal individual, an Asian woman, who was the one involved in this conspiracy. It was a conspiracy that actually also went across state lines. There were a series of meetings across the St. Croix, if you will, in Hudson, Wisconsin, where at least a couple of individuals lived, if you will. Finally, Mr. Salam stepped forward, 30 years an employee of the Department of Human Resources, if you will, and having significant information. The combination of the documentation and information that he had and the combination of the information that I have caused a decision to be made to review, as I had requested in the confirmation hearing of Chief Arredondo a number of months ago. I had called for the seizing of all our documentation, hard drives, and et cetera, because of tampering with computer information by the employees of the Human Resources Department to cover their criminal activities, if you will. Initially, my request as a part of just a, we were on, you know, allow 2 minutes as citizens per se to address the Minneapolis City Council during the confirmation hearing. I took the opportunity and chose the opportunity to call attention to the fact that already, even before his official selection had taken place, that Chief Arredondo was already being undermined by individuals, including the leadership of the Human Resources Department. Point we fought, I fought, that nothing was going to be done, that the decision had been made that this could, quote-unquote, be swept under the rug and et cetera. But it actually, for those that are a part of the listening audience, particularly those of you that may talk to Council President Barb Johnson, who is one of the heroes here, along with Mr. Salam, if you will, began to raise questions about what was happening. And then the city attorney's office pulled the rug out from under Human Resources, and by extension, probably pulled the rug out from under the mayor. One of the things that I was greatly disappointed in was that 2 weeks ago, I was made aware of the fact that the city council president, Barb Johnson, was being lied to. Information was being withheld from her as the head of the Minneapolis City Council. We operate in a city that has basically a strong council, weak mayor, form of government, as they call it, but it is the police department is one of really three departments that are under the direct supervision of the mayor, the other one being the fire department, and the other one, to some extent, the city coordinator's office. We were not necessarily surprised. We knew that there was a lot of scrambling going on. We also were aware that Minnesota Public Radio had put their top investigative reporter on top of this matter in July, having to do with information that had been imparted to Minnesota Public Radio, that there was serious corruption, money laundering, and et cetera going on. There, as we said before, had been a series of clandestine meetings in Hudson, Wisconsin. And Minnesota Public Radio got on top of the issue, began to ask questions. They were lied to. They were provided with forged and fraudulent documentation and et cetera. It appears, though, now that probably within the next 10 days of this broadcast that Minnesota Public Radio will do a in-depth investigative report, as we have done. But we have done it for quite some time. We have done it for over 20 to 21 months. For that period of time, we have known this commentator, as a member of the Federal Oversight Committee, had known that we were being lied to, but we were being obstructed at every level. And the chief of the department, who later was forced out by the mayor, was being pressured to, quote-unquote, not allow any revelations to take place with regards to what was happening. In fact, people were having difficulty understanding the depth and the complexity of this collusion, this conspiracy, these criminal activities, if you will, including federal monies being used for criminal activities and et cetera. We became the principal person as a communicator, having, you know, television, radio, and newspaper column to continue to raise the question. It ultimately led to a phone call from the mayor of the city to me on a Monday morning. As soon as I received that call, I knew what was going on. The mayor and I were not chit-chat friends, not phone friends or anything else. I had talked to her only one other time during her tenure as mayor of the city of Minneapolis, and is when I invited her to come on my television program here in the city of Minneapolis and talk a little bit about the positive thing, that, you know, that was really our intention. She declined, did not have the courage and the decency to at least call back and indicate that, for whatever reason, you know, she could not be interviewed or, in fact, come on my program, if you will. But now, you know, all that's too late. And so clearly tomorrow morning's edition, which will be posted here in the Twin Cities around 11 o'clock Central Daylight Saving Time. By the way, we're coming up on the end of Daylight Saving Time, right? Will be posted by the Star Tribune and by the same reporter following on the heels of this program and this commentator breaking the news that Don DeMonico was filing a lawsuit in the Hennepin County District Court against the mayor for defamation of character, if you will, and for other statements impugning his reputation, integrity, legacy, and et cetera. And so for those of you out there that were so critical in your reflections on John DeMonico, if you will, did not understand that what was being worked was a significant cover-up and a significant violation of federal law in the doctrine of information, statistics, and data, if you will, and that the percentage of officers of color, even going back to candidates, if you will, of color, had been on the decline for a couple of years, ever since the head of human resources and her Asian companion had come over from the YWCA. They came, I guess, as a team, if you will. We were greatly disappointed that, with the exception of Council President Barb Johnson and maybe one or two other council members, that far too many council members turned and looked the other way. The bombshell for this is the decision by the city attorney's office, the chief legal counsel to the city of Minneapolis, not to continue to carry out the charade. As we said before, in a meeting with the chief of the department, human resources was actually bodacious enough to actually present the fraudulent documentation to the chief of the police department and indicate that these were authentic numbers and et cetera. Now, in a preceding meeting, the city attorney was asked to send a representative because people were beginning to get uneasy with what was being heard. The city attorney took possession, the city attorney's office took possession of the documents that were being presented by human resources, which were forgeries, were falsifications, and et cetera, went back and looked at those documents which had been certified by the city attorney's office based on previous historical documentation and et cetera, concluded that the information given by human resources to the chief of the Minneapolis police were in fact fraudulent, bogus. And once that happened, then there were apparently a series of confrontations and et cetera. The mayor of the city has taken no leadership whatsoever in trying to get to the bottom of this violation of a federal agreement. You see, you can't dismiss what is about to happen if, in fact, the Sessions Department of Justice makes a decision that this is worth or worthy as it pertains to their doctrine, their philosophy, their politics, to embarrass the Democratic Party as we move for state elections next year, 2018, as well as the by midterm elections for our federal representatives and et cetera. But luckily, the two Minnesota senators are not up for reelection, but there could be some changes as it pertains to the House of Representatives seat. But that's still a little over a year off. But it is not a year off. The election that will take place in about 14-15 days, in which all members of the city council and the incumbent mayor and some lesser offices are all up for re-election. As we said earlier in this program, that there has been a great effort, corrupt as it is, to disguise, hide, and try to suppress. They have not been able to suppress this commentator, and it appears now that they've not been able to suppress the Minnesota Public Radio, and it now looks like, as of tomorrow morning, for those of you that know how to get the paper, they are in trouble with the largest and most powerful newspaper in the state of Minnesota, the Minneapolis Star Tribune. This is all critical. We fought about a month ago that those who were candidates, including one who is a member of the city council, Jacob Fry, and others who are very much knowledgeable of city politics, were going to raise these questions about just what was the situation with the recruitment and hiring of persons of color to the police department, particularly in light of all the rhetoric that we've been hearing since the tragic death of a Australian national here in our city, the Mohammed Nord situation, if you will, people talking about reform and et cetera. And so tomorrow morning's edition will indicate that Chief Arredondo has sent a signal that he is prepared to reopen the agreement. Now, both the agreement of 2008 and the agreement of 2016. You see, somebody needs to make sure that they understand that once you reopen the agreement of 2008, which saved this department, federal receivership, that you're also taking a look at the amended actions that had to be taken because it had been discovered, if you will, that the previous administration, both mayor and former chiefs of the department, not Janae Hartel, but the former chief, Tim Dolan, and Mayor R.T. Ryback had been complicit in violating the federal agreement of 2008, and consequently, our chief, Janae Hartel, with the assistance of a very outstanding assistant chief, Chris Arneson, decided that they would do what was ever necessary to correct these specific actions, if you will. And so it will be interesting in the coming days to see how the announcement of the desired intent by the current chief of the police department, Chief Arredondo, to reopen, we repeat again, for effect, the federal agreement of 2008 and 2016. There have been some in the African-American community, particularly our black ministers, who have maintained that there has been an incomplete agenda, if you will, and that there is a strong possibility that this department, police department, should be placed in federal receivership. My concern, as a longtime activist and a person who has presided over both the fire department and have raised questions about the police department and set on committees which have been involved in corrective actions in order to keep the federal government out of the business of the city, is that we are concerned now that there will be no hesitation on the Sessions Department of Justice to carry out and conduct an action against the police department, which is headed by an African American. I mean, that is just as good as you can convey and a signal that you can send. And I'm trying to figure out, as we move into the last half hour of the tonight's program, I'm trying to figure out what kind of thinking was going on in suppressing the fact that corruption, criminal intent, violation of federal agreements and et cetera had taken place. And you put the black guy, Chief Arredondo, in the hot seat, if you will. And so we were as a journalist, we were somewhat surprised that a political decision had been made to indicate that there was a strong possibility of the reopening of the federal mediation agreement of both 2008 and 2016. That would possibly be the only way discussion and the possibility of federal receivership could be suppressed as it pertains to a Jeff Sessions, a Trump Department of Justice, taking a look at embarrassing the Democrats to the max, if you will, because it will clearly be an embarrassment. We said earlier, by the way, that one of the people that was lied to and actually signed their name to the document was the current president of the Police Federation, Robert Crow, who actually, and we worked together very effectively for a couple of years. He was basically fair, if you will. He had to protect the interests of his rank and file, if you will. And in some regards, he followed in the footsteps of the longtime president of the Police Federation, John DeMonaco, who now is preparing his lawsuit against Mayor Betsy Hodges. It will be interesting, the depositions and the testimony. By the way, some of the folks in my community, the African-American community, who were so quick to go on the attack, now need to understand that they are a party to the litigation and can be subpoenaed, brought in for deposition, and forced to testify at trial. Some maintain that John DeMonaco, in fact, wants to go to trial, that he's not interested in a big settlement. He wants his name cleared, if you will. He wants an apology, if you will, and he wants consequences for those that had damaged his good name and the name of his family and his legacy and et cetera. And so many may not understand the article in the Minneapolis Star Tribune that will go online, as we said before, sitting here in our studio headquarters in Minneapolis, by 11:15 Central Standard Time. I cannot impress upon you, my listening audience, our listening audience, what this means for the chief to indicate the intention to reopen the federal agreement. Because see, here's one of the things that happened. We were just reviewing it in the last couple of hours, and of course one of the first things that jumps out at you is the configuration of the numbers as it pertains to diversity. How many officers of color do you have? How well have you carried out the responsibility that Minneapolis took as a city to make sure that there would be increasing numbers and et cetera? You know, in fact, one of the groups that has been just absolutely decimated by the dishonesty and treachery have been Native Americans, and we are a strong Native American state. We have a very strong, active Native American political community here in the city of Minneapolis, and they, just as Bob Crow, president of the Police Federation, was lied to, we all were lied to, but we signed our name to the document indicating that all matters pertaining to the agreement of 2008 had been satisfied and completed, if you will, and yet some of us knew that we were signing a document that probably was inconsistent with the facts, but it took another year, almost year and a half, tenaciousness, if you will, in some cases, conflict, if you will, to force the hand, particularly of the Human Resources Department. The things that they have done, even with the short term that Chief Arredondo has been the head of the department, which is basically less than, 2 months, it is just beyond imagination that the head of the Human Resources Department and those in the city coordinator's office and in the mayor's office would be so comfortable with flipping the hot potato to Chief Arredondo, for he will have to be the one that explains to the Jeff Sessions Department of Justice why there is now a request, quote unquote, to review and possibly modify or correct significant errors. And by the way, we have known, this commentator has known for quite some time, that definitely ever since 2011 and thereabouts, that there started to be tampering with the agreement. And it is the reason why in 2013 that Chief Janae Harto asked for the Office of Justice Programs, OJP, to come in and to kind of do a backup and an assessment. Now, you have to understand that what was interesting about that was that that was almost 2 years before the occupation of the 4th Precinct, which created a lot of people talking about and screaming and hollering about the police department and what it was doing and what it wasn't doing and how it was doing it and et cetera. It's too bad that these same people were not as vigilant during the period of 2004 through 2014, but I guess sometimes a mission seeking justice is a mission that some people who don't have the endurance become very tired, very weary, and need other things to do, if you will. We have expressed our concern also with regards to the monies that have been paid out as a part of also disguising the so-called commitment to our public safety and making a more safe community for people of color who oftentimes are the victims of the violence and the brutality. I mean, just a couple of nights ago, another East African, a Somali, was executed in his car, if you will, on the south side of the city. We are approaching 40 homicides. Now, understand, this is Minneapolis. This is not Chicago, if you will, which is, oh, what, my God, 2.6 million people larger, if you will, proportionally. 40 homicides is a tremendous number of homicides in a city that is a population of just a tad over 400,000. Yet a lot of money has been spent. In fact, over $1.5 million has been spent by the current administration in City Hall to allegedly deal with the violence on the street. One of the problems that we are faced with here in the Twin Cities, to our listening audience, is that we only have about 67 black officers, and we have an overall contingent, including other officers of color and et cetera, maybe an additional 60 to 70, and maybe 130, 135. We also don't play the game of identifying white females as minorities, if you will. White females go in the white category where they should. In fact, in 2015, we were received by the Seattle Police Department, who is in federal receivership, still are, and we reviewed and discussed with the Seattle Police Department the legal rationale for not commingling those numbers, white females as minorities, quote unquote. All of that is important because the numbers. We have a department now that is approaching 900. There is ultimately a goal of over 1,000, if you will, which nobody should argue with, given the level of violence and death and mayhem, given what has been happening in downtown Minneapolis, if you will. I mean, we're very Irvine city, if you will, consider ourselves to be, right up there with the rest of the sophisticated. And yet people are expressing concern, particularly as we move towards the Super Bowl, where big money is expected to come in. Let us kind of now move over to that particular issue, because there is really no specific plan to make sure that the communities of color, African American, Native American, et cetera, participate or enjoy the landfall of profit, if you will. The most successful African American here in Minnesota, who is already positioned, is a man by the name of Louis King. We call him Dr. Louis King. He should have his degree in economics, because Louis has been the man. He is making the money. He is the only person that has anything representing a business profit-making entity inside of the $1.4 or $5 billion People's Stadium here in downtown Minneapolis, with his concession stand, which is averaging probably as much as $250,000 a game. And Louis King, who also heads up the OIC facility that supposedly trains young men and women of color. But Louis is involved in a number of things, and is probably picking up anywhere from $2 to $3 million a year in income, supplement income, and et cetera. Now, Dr. King, as we call him, is in position to enjoy all of what is coming to the city of Minneapolis in February of 2018. Here's the only problem. Now we move into that other issue, big meeting, press conference today in New York. NFL owners and players said they'll be meeting again in about 2 weeks. Everybody talk in terms of the controversy and et cetera. They can all thank President Donald Trump, if you will. He helped to set the tone. But the fact of the matter is that, there is a possibility if things go wrong, if the players rebel and et cetera, we could very well have a situation where football could abruptly end after Thanksgiving, as an example. And we'd be in a situation where we wouldn't have any Super Bowl in 2018. And I got to tell you, man, that would be a disaster for this city and for both cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, if we had no Super Bowl here. Because when you talk about the planning, the money that has already been spent, if you will, the stories that are being told about how white Minnesotans will really enjoy all aspects of the Super Bowl, which will last for apparently 11 days, 10 to 11 days of festivities, activities, and et cetera, if you will. And just the possibility of an eruption and a fracturing, if you will, of relationships between the players, the owners, the Players Association, and the NFL spells disaster, if you will. You'd be hearing all kinds of breach of contracts and et cetera. But for those that are in support of the players, those that are in support of a young man who stood up a year ago and talked in terms of wanting to do that which was in pursuit of justice and fairness, if you will, Colin Kaepernick, a man who took it on, but that's what history is really all about, that he has set the stage for a, multi-billion-dollar industry, if you will, seeing itself fall on some hard times. One of the things that America needs, and by the way, we notice there hasn't been a lot of saber-rattling about what they're going to do in North Korea. One of the things that has kept the nation known as the United States of America strong for so many years, particularly starting around the First World War, definitely the Second World War, and definitely everything after that, is that we can always depend on sports, a form of entertainment, if you will, that will help us understand what is happening, that will make us feel that there is some opportunity, there's a safety net, if you will, there's something that we can look forward to other than the casualties and et cetera. And if you have a situation based on what's happening right now in this country under the Trump administration, and we don't have, all we can look at is NASCAR and the rodeo, And contrary to what they say, you know, ice hockey, a great sport, a great game, but certainly it is not paramount, quote unquote, to what Billy Bob likes to do, you know, with a case of beer, if you will, or some good Jack Daniels or et cetera. So you keep that in mind. Let us also say tonight, as we move down to the last minutes, our condolences always go out to the military personnel of the United States of America. Those of the Army, Navy, Marines, Coast Guard, Air Force, and et cetera, who stand post, if you will, make it possible for us to have a program like this, make it possible for us to enjoy the better aspects of life. Well, we in the African-American community certainly can not begin to enjoy the amenities that white America enjoys, if you will. It just hasn't worked out that way, even though, you know, the Emancipation Proclamation was signed way back in 1863. But what the president did in the last couple of days to David Johnson, a Green Beret killed in a black African country, if you will, we touched on that the last couple of programs, that we seem to be a nation that has no problem with killing in combat, both known and clandestinely, people of color, be they black or yellow, brown, red, I mean, you know. And when Trump did what he did to the mother and the widow of Sergeant Johnson, killed in a desolate area, if you will, in Niger, as some pronounce it, if you will, Niger, as others pronounce it, but a country in black Africa, in the sub-Sahara, a young man who gives his life in defense of the nation, of the flag, free speech, but also, you know, gave his life in defense of the presidency of the United States and all of that constitutes America's government. And it is quite clear and has been attested to, I don't think that President Trump or whoever it was is really on the phone knew how many people were in that car listening speaker to that call, that chilling call, that kind of dismissal of a black mother, but more importantly, a black wife, a mother who is expecting her third child, if you will, so callous, so disregarding, so dismissive of the importance of a black American who gave his life in defense of this nation and of this flag. But see, in the election of 2016, there were those of us who have a platform, which is what we have, were saying that this is a dangerous man, and those that are around him are dangerous. They represent the inconsistency of anything that has to do with fairness and respect, decency in the United States of America. And to be talking to the wife and the mother of an American who gave his life, as we said, in a desolate place in, quote-unquote, the sub-Sahara, that he couldn't even remember the young man's name. He couldn't even remember the wife's name. He couldn't remember the mother's name. And he just got through talking to him. And a man who showed during the Republican convention last summer in the summer of 2016 in Cleveland, Ohio, that he really doesn't see black people as important other than, you know, waiting on him, you know, shining his shoes, helping him select his suit. Because, you know, one of the things that he did, he decided that the chief housekeeper of the White House, an African-American woman of great principle, et cetera, no one talked about how they got rid of her just about 4 or 5 months ago. He has no regards or respect for a lot of people, but he definitely has nothing for us, the sons and daughters of the African, if you will. And not only is that sad, spiritually, emotionally, and et cetera, but it's dangerous because you continue to create enemies. And we have not spoken on this program with any detail or specificity about Las Vegas. But you have to understand that they didn't see that coming, if you will. They should have. There are enough mental health problems in white America, if you will, as we reported on a program a couple weeks ago after attending a big, big conference here in Minneapolis, that, you know, 75%, yes, 75%, we're not, it's not a misspoken, the suicides in America are older white males, 75%. And I took a look yesterday at the information being shown on a map on the opiates, if you will, the problem with drugs and et cetera. I do see that the president realized it was really too hot in the kitchen, and he had to get rid of that quote-unquote individual from Pennsylvania, Marino, who was nothing but a whore for the pharmaceutical industry in pushing through a bill that now is such an embarrassment to the 535 members of the United States Congress, the House, and the Senate, who now, with great remorse, according to them, admit that they didn't even know what that piece of legislation was that actually deflocked the DEA. If it had not been for 60 Minutes and the Washington Post, if you will, many of us would not have known it, though those of us in Black America who have been very much involved in understanding and remembering the message of the beloved Maxine Waters in 1985 when she tried to warn Black America, and by extension, all of America, who it was that was beginning to provide drug addiction into the heart and soul of America, if you will. Now people are in a state of shock. You know, what is it now, 66,000 a year Americans of all colors and persuasions dying, overdosing, and et cetera. Even our Republican sheriff here in Hennepin County, where city of Minneapolis is located, and the city is the county seat, Rich Nanick, 2 years ago, went into the African-American community, and he called meetings. He called meetings at Shiloh. He had the meetings at Turning Point there, working with Dr. Hayden and others, trying to indicate that this epidemic, this addiction, was on the move. Reason, of course, that there was concern is because the statistical data indicated that an inordinate amount of white people were now ODing, overdosing fatally, if you will, and that something really needed to be done about it, and there needed to be some quote-unquote foot soldiers to get out there and protest and conclude. Think about it, my friends. Here in our city, our beloved city of Minneapolis and St. Paul, silence on the civil rights African-American leadership on the opiate problem. And yet our young people are going out left and right, if you will. You'd be surprised at the number of calls that are coming to the fire department and later to the homicide unit. And young African-American men primarily, but even some older African-American women, found in their homes, on the floor, sitting in the bathroom, and et cetera, sometimes the needle still in their arm. God bless you, Black Minnesota. God bless you, Black America. For those of y'all to get a chance, read tomorrow morning's edition of the Minneapolis Star Tribune. Chief Arredondo trying to do the right thing and save the administration of Betsy Hodges. We'll see you next week, and may we continue to stay strong. I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Ron and Don Program.